was, he'd been as young and unsure of himself as I'd been. That Pink Floyd shirt he'd worn had been so old, it would have been impossible to keep it around. But I wished he still had it. I'd never forget that image of him sitting with a cigarette in the corner of his mouth as he'd assessed me with a curious, albeit restrained, gaze.
"Ready to go back in?" he asked.
Lost in the memory, I hadn't noticed him leave my side. I turned to find him a few feet back, as if he'd started for the house without me.
"Sure." "Don't forget your jewelry," he said,
a twinkle in his eye. "Ha ha," I said, showing him the bracelet on my wrist. "You wish I'd lose it again, just so you could be the hero and find it."
"I'm serious."
He nodded at my feet.
"You dropped something."
As I glanced down, a glint of gold caught the light of the lowering sun. I stooped, about to pick up what looked like a piece of jewelry, but froze. A ring shone against the pavement, centered with a pearly, iridescent stone surrounded by diamonds. Although it looked valuable, its uniqueness struck me first, that awful feeling of losing something sentimental. "This isn't mine, but it's beautiful," I said. He bent down and dusted it off. I barely caught the suppressed smile on his face before I noticed he was on one knee. I gasped, covering my mouth as my eyes watered.
"Manning, what?"
"I wasn't planning this or anything," he said. "Been carrying it around for a while, and I definitely didn't think I'd do this at your parents, of all places."
I kept my hand over my mouth, nodding, even though I struggled to make sense of what he was saying.
"This is a moonstone."
He held up the ring.
"Over time, the color can subtly change. It's not the most expensive stone or the most traditional. It's kind of like the adult version of a mood ring. See how the edges aren't smooth?"
The stone took a natural shape, oval but still misshapen, highlighted by the tiny diamonds around the outside edge. I nodded.
"I didn't just pick the most expensive ring," he said. "I wanted one that reminded me of you."
Finally, I lowered my hands, dropping onto my knees. "Are you asking me to marry you? Why are you talking so much?" He laughed.
"Nerves, I guess."
"You know my answer, Manning." He took my hand in both of his and removed our cherished mood ring from my fourth finger.
"I love you, Lake. I guess there are lots more romantic places I could ask you to be mine. But where better than the first spot I laid eyes on you?"
Manning had to have known proposing in a place painted with our history would mean more to me than anything else. I nodded hard. "I love you too."
"In this spot, you opened your beautiful mouth and decided to trust me, to love someone you weren't supposed to ask me about Pink Floyd."
He smiled.
"So I'd really like if, right here, you'd agree to be my wife."
"I do," I said, bumbling over the words with a fluttered laugh. "I mean, yes, I do comes later."
"Officially, even though I already think of you as mine forever, will you marry me?"
How could I possibly explain how much I wanted that too, had always wanted that? What could I say to convey my love for him? "Manning."
"Just say yes, Bertie."
My eyes watered. Though I'd fought with Manning many times over the fact that perfection didn't exist, in the end, I might have actually been wrong about that. A tear crept down my cheek. "Yes." He slid the ring in place and stood, helping me up. I launched myself into his arms and he pulled me against him so tightly I was off my feet, our mouths meeting. "You went awfully far to get me to kiss you at my parents' house," I whispered against his lips.
"Not far enough, if you ask me."
He pecked me and set me down.
"Let's get back inside before they come looking for us."
"Do we have to?" I sighed as he took my hand and walked us up the walkway. I lifted our interlocked hands to inspect the ring. "It's beautiful. I don't want to share it with anyone." He released my hand, took the ring off, and tucked it into a black velvet box.
"I'll put it back on you tonight, when we're home."
I snuggled into his side, silently thanking him for not asking why. I didn't need Tiffany judging my non-diamond, or Mom and Dad trying to figure out what it meant.
Manning was the one who always reminded me our relationship was nobody else's business. We were years beyond allowing anyone else to dictate how we should feel about each other. He pushed the ring box back in his pocket and opened the front door for us. "There you two are," Mom said as we walked back into the dining room. "We were about to give up and have some pie." "We'll get it," Manning and I said at the same time. We both laughed as Mom, Dad, and Tiffany stared blankly at us. Once, Manning and I had served my family pie together on special guest dishes. I'd snuck glances at him, trying to figure him out, and Manning was surely remembering the same thing. I opened the Tupperware I'd brought as Manning uncovered the cake dish with Tiffany's pie.
"Is this apple?"
he asked.
"Looks good."
I smiled sweetly at him. "I love you, Great Bear, but if you lay a finger on that pie, I'll toss that engagement ring in the garbage disposal and walk out of your life forever." He guffawed a laugh, pushed aside the plate, and pulled me into his arms.
"You didn't let me finish. I was saying that pie looks good for a second-rate pastry. You should know nothing, and nobody, could ever steal me away from my favorite flavor, blueberry."
Big Bear, Summer 2009. Chapter 8. Despite a home filled with friends and family, I had no doubt who was tapping on my door at midnight. I turned on a lamp and got out of bed. With a knowing smile, I tied my robe around my waist. I answered to find Manning leaning in the doorway, arms crossed over a black T-shirt.
"Don't like knocking on my own bedroom door."
"You can't come in," I said.
"I'm not above begging."
He looked me over.
"Were you asleep?"
"Not even close."
"I didn't think so. Is it nerves?"
"No," I whispered, stepping into him. I'd slept without him enough nights while away at school, so now that I'd graduated and lived full-time in Big Bear, I didn't want to sleep alone anymore. "I just want tomorrow to go well. Did you have a good time barbecuing for everyone tonight?"
"Yeah. I don't know how much rehearsing we did, but it's nice to have us all in one place."
"Did you ever think, when you built this place, that the bedrooms would one day be filled with people we love?"
"Can't say that I did. I didn't think of myself as such a lucky bastard."
At tonight's rehearsal dinner, I'd looked around a backyard filled with people I cared about. As my eyes had landed on Manning at the grill, I'd wondered, could he say the same? Henry, Manning's only father figure, had made the trip with his entire family, and he'd brought Manning's aunt along as well. Gary was also in town with his wife, Lydia. The absence of Manning's parents and sister rarely affected us day to day, but this weekend, it would be unavoidable. Since it was my first time alone with him since that morning, I said, "I'm sorry your family couldn't be here." He thumbed the hollow of my cheek.
"My aunt came. Madison's always with me some way or another."
"But your parents..."
"Don't mean anything to me anymore."
I played with his shirt hem. "You were close with your mom before everything, though. I'm not saying she should have been here. I only wish things were different for you."
"And I'm saying that I don't wish a single thing was different."
I smiled, fisting his T-shirt to bring him closer. "You are a lucky bastard," I said. "Just not tonight. I don't think we're supposed to be cavorting at all."
"Hmm."
He sighed, rejected and dejected.
"If only the wedding police weren't a real thing."
"Very funny," I said. "I'd like to take this moment to remind you that you were the one who wanted a traditional wedding. I would have been fine keeping it low-key, but you had to have a blessing from my dad, a rehearsal dinner, a bouquet and boutonniere, blue as a ring-bearer."
"I never said anything about spending a night apart, though."
"You don't get to pick and choose which traditions you abide by," I said, rising to the tips of my toes to kiss his cheek. "Enjoy a night to yourself in the guest room." I went to shut the door when Manning caught it with his hand.
"Aren't you the least bit curious as to why I'm here?"
"I know why you're here," I said, but the amused look on his face had me doubting myself.
"Give me some credit," he said. "I can go without it for an evening. I did it four nights a week for years."
"Not lately," I reminded him. Ever since we finalized the wedding plans, it's as if you haven't been physically capable of keeping your hands to yourself.
That's 'cause picturing you in a wedding dress drives me insane.
He groaned, massaging the bridge of his nose, as if it actually pained him.
I can't talk about this or I'll break tradition and spoil our plans for tonight.
Plans? I asked, checking the clock on the nightstand. It's after midnight on the day of our wedding. He tugged on the sash of my robe.
Throw on some jeans and tennis shoes, and meet me out front.
We can't go anywhere, I said. We have a house full of guests.
They won't even know we're gone. Come on, hurry up.
I'm the bride, I said. I need my beauty rest. He opened my robe.
You couldn't get any more beautiful.
The way his lids fell as he trailed a finger down the front of my nightie, I had a feeling if I didn't agree to go out, we'd wind up staying in and sacrificing sleep anyway. All right, I said, stopping his hand in its tracks. You'd better head out front before we get ourselves in trouble. Alone, I flipped on the closet light to change. Truthfully, I was grateful for whatever Manning had planned. Before he'd knocked, I'd been staring at the ceiling, overthinking what we were about to do. Marrying Manning wouldn't be hard. It was doing it in front of everybody we knew and loved that had been keeping me up. My suggestion to go to City Hall had been genuine, but perhaps one made out of fear. Up until January, he and I had lived in our own private bubble. We'd been spending time here and there with my family, but they'd only known us as a couple 7 months. It was as if we were all getting reacquainted. As I left our bedroom and headed down a hallway of closed doors where my parents, Manning's aunt, and some of my girlfriends slept, I couldn't help worrying about standing up in front of all of them with a man no one thought I was supposed to end up with. Did they still have their doubts? To Manning's credit, except for a libido in overdrive, he'd been nothing but calm about the wedding since he'd proposed. He had no doubts, no nerves. If anything, he'd been working harder than usual to ensure all the details were taken care of. So when I found him waiting at the base of the porch steps with Blue, looking every inch a man in jeans and fishing boots, the porch swing's floral-printed cushions under one arm, any fears I had vanished. Tomorrow was about marrying the man I loved, a man both tough and sensitive, determined but attentive. It wasn't about anything or anyone else but us. "Why are you wearing galoshes?" I asked, taking his outstretched hand. I started for his truck, but he pulled me around the side of the house toward the back. "And what are the cushions for?"
"Guess," he said.
Manning and I had explored the woods behind the house plenty of times. Usually we went back there for two reasons, to walk Blue or to go on the lake. Neither of those seemed like great after-dark activities. "I'm stumped," I said. As we crossed from our backyard into the woods, Manning kept me close with an arm around my shoulders. Blue darted through the trees but always sprinted back when we called for her. Perhaps if I'd been anywhere except the place I called home, I might have been spooked by the cover of darkness, by the rustling bushes or the haunting hoots and flapping of wings echoing around us. Instead, I snuggled into the side of the man I knew would kill to protect me or die trying. The closer we got to the edge of the forest, the more convinced I was that Manning had lost his mind and decided to recreate the night we'd snuck out of camp, gone for a drive, and wound up in the water. The woods spit us out into a clearing that opened up to a tiny lake we'd come to know well. It was shallow, mostly off the map, and small enough for us to drift aimlessly. Manning kept the first dinghy he'd ever made there, tied to a stake in the ground. He'd built other boats, some he'd sold, and with help, a larger one we kept at one of Big Bear Lake's marinas. But we had this little slice of heaven all to ourselves most of the time. "We're going on the lake?" I asked.
"Bingo," he replied. "Go on. Climb on over the starboard side."
Manning winked before he added,
"And into my lap."
It was the same thing he'd said to me my first night at the house in Big Bear. No matter how endearing his invitation, I stayed where I was. We'd made love in this boat. I'd laughed until my sides had ached watching Manning try and fail to catch a fish with his hands. We'd drifted around in it on hot afternoons eating orange slices as the sun had set, but we'd certainly never taken it out at night. Blue whined, probably sensing she was about to get left behind. Blue and I are going to need a bit of an explanation before we proceed, I said. He squatted to untie the boat, and I heard the smile in his voice.
What's wrong? Don't trust me.
To steer this thing in the dark?
The stars are out.
He gestured up at the sky.
They'll guide us, Birdie.
Actually, I said, hands on my hips, it's a crescent moon and particularly dark tonight.
I know, he said. I wish I could say I planned it that way, but we just got lucky.
Warily, I climbed over the starboard side and set up both cushions. Once I was seated at the bow, he pushed the boat through the weeds and waded in after it.
Stay, he told Blue.
She barked once to get her point across, but plopped down at the edge of the lake, watching us go as she had many times before. Where are we headed? I asked once Manning had climbed in.
To the middle.
Slowly, he rowed us out on the water. As the night spread around us, complete stillness punctuated by occasional splashes and croaks, I began to wonder if the journey was the destination. Though Manning and I had planned a fairly low-key weekend for the wedding, there was no getting around the chaos that came with having friends and family in one place. Tiffany's dress had needed last-minute altering. Henry's truck had broken down 10 miles from the house. Our washing machine's hose had begun leaking hours before guests had arrived. It had been days, maybe even weeks, since I'd experienced this kind of stillness and peace. Okay, this was a good idea, I admitted, shutting my eyes and relaxing against the back of the boat to enjoy the warm breeze.
Yeah? Manning asked. How come?
It's so easy to get caught up in the details of making sure tomorrow goes smoothly. I want to look back and remember everything. It's good to slow down and take it all in.
Smiling, I opened my eyes.
Feel free to remind me of that throughout the weekend.
Traditionally, Manning said, I'm not supposed to see you most of tomorrow, either. At least not until we've said I do.
I sighed. I'm thinking I'll be doing away with some of these silly rituals at my next wedding.
Your next wedding?
He dropped the paddles and stood, rocking the boat hard enough that I squealed and grabbed the sides.
Take that back.
Or what? I teased.
I tipped this boat over. It'd serve you right for antagonizing the bears.
In the dark, looming over me, he almost did look like a bear.
You wouldn't, I said. I might, he said, if we weren't here.
Where's here?
Middle of the lake. Best spot to see the show.
He reached for me.
Come.
Taking his hand, I let him guide me forward to sit between his legs. He enveloped me, hugging my back to his chest.
Look up.
I relaxed against him, resting my arms on his as I scanned the countless stars. In the pitch black, they shone especially bright. They're beautiful, I said.
You know I'll always move the stars for you if need be, he said. Whatever it takes.
Though I appreciated the warmth behind his words, wasn't it possible some fates couldn't be rearranged? The vastness of the black sky and the sheer number of stars overhead made me feel small and insignificant, but not in a bad way. Did the universe have plans for us? Or had Manning and I really defined our own destiny? And what did either of those realities mean for our future? It had been many months since Manning and I had thrown out my birth control. Weeks since I'd had to stop making excuses not to get my wedding dress tailored. I suppose most women would have been happy not to walk down the aisle with a baby bump, but I'd almost planned on it. Manning wasn't worried. When it came up, he reminded me we had time, that it would happen. I wished I had the confidence he did, but I hadn't expected it to take this long. Manning bent his mouth to my ear.
Lake,
he asked.
Did you hear me?
Whatever it takes. It occurred to me as we sat under the glittering stars that Manning would do anything in his power to move them in our favor. But what would it do to him if he couldn't? Is something wrong? I asked.
No. I just want you to know I don't take tomorrow lightly. My vows to love and care for you are a promise. Always. No matter what comes our way.
I know, I said.
Open your hand.
I flipped my palm up, and he put something small and cool in it. I lifted it to my face. "I haven't seen this in months," I said, admiring the mood ring. "Where'd you find it?"
"In your jewelry box. I thought you might want it for tomorrow."
I slid it on, flexing my hand so we could both see it. "Madison would be standing up there with me if she were still alive," I said.
"I know."
He held me a little more tightly, and we sat in silence until light streaked across the sky. "Look," I said, pointing. "A shooting star."
"Not quite," he said.
The timing was almost too perfect. As more silver stars sliced the blackness over our heads, I sat up straighter. This really was a show. "What's going on?" I asked.
"Moving stars."
I glanced over my shoulder at him. "What?"
"The Perseid meteor shower. Happens every August."
"The night before our wedding?" I asked.
"Technically, we're getting married today."
Hearing him say that, I got chills. By this time tomorrow night, Manning would be my husband. With happy tears in my eyes, I burrowed deeper into him as more and more meteors painted the sky. "Wait, is that why you insisted on this weekend when I suggested summer?" I asked. He shrugged underneath me.
"Once in a great while. We get the timing right."
"You're such a romantic."
"Only for you," he said. "But that's no surprise to anyone."
I twisted my head up to him. He kissed me slowly, deliberately, without spilling a drop of the overflowing love between us. Above our heads, the sky moved and rearranged. It couldn't have been a more perfect way to start forever together. Perhaps our timing had always been right, and like Manning, I needed to let go and trust that in the end, we'd get everything we were supposed to. Chapter 9.
"You aren't worried Manning will get cold feet?"
Behind me, in my master bathroom, my sister wielded a curling iron in one hand and plucked at my hair with the other.
"He could be halfway to Mexico by now. We'd have no idea until you were headed down the aisle."
"Tiffany," Mom scolded, glancing up from where she'd perched on the clawfoot tub. She held up her cell phone.
"I just spoke to your father. He's with Manning, and everyone's accounted for."
I couldn't help but laugh as Val shook her head the same grave way she did whenever Hollywood announced another Pirates of the Caribbean movie. Halfway down the counter from us, in between applying fake lashes, she said,
"Lake is more likely to bolt than Manning."
Tiffany paused in the middle of taking a break from curling my hair to touch up her own. She widened her eyes at me in the mirror.
"Are you thinking about ditching him at the altar?"
"Of course not. Nothing could stop me from marrying the man of my dreams today. Still, the generally chilly idea of cold feet had me closing the lapels of my satin robe at the base of my throat.
"This wedding is such a sure bet that if it doesn't happen, I'll move into your basement and do all your cooking and cleaning like Cinderella."
"Really?" Tiffany asked, either missing the fact or not caring about my implication that she was an evil stepsister. She sighed happily as she swept my curls off my back to my shoulders. She looked over my head, studying her work in the mirror.
"I mean, I'll have to check with Robbie first. He's very particular about his space."
"Obviously," I agreed, exchanging a muted giggle with my mom. It wasn't that my joke was lost on Tiffany. She just always had Robbie on the brain. I was glad for it. She'd been so distracted by him the past several months that she'd hardly paid Manning and me any attention. I'd met Dr. Robbie with the nice golden blonde hair to match his nice face. As my mom had promised, he was a stable and patient man who owned his home and was good with kids. At least, he usually had a lollipop on him. More importantly, he was as enamored by Tiffany's carefree approach to life as she was drawn to his adoration of her. Not long after Manning's and my visit in January, Robbie had proposed. And Tiffany never let us forget it.
"Ah," she said, "my ring keeps getting caught in your hair."
"Which ring?" Val asked, rummaging through her makeup bag.
"My engagement ring," Tiffany said.
"Oh, right." Val popped open a blush compact, swiped a brush through it, and blew off the excess powder, all while managing a smirk.
I guess I forgot. Thanks for clarifying.
Tiffany shot Val a daggered look. How dare she forget such big news? I held in a laugh so I wouldn't further anger my sister. She was not only in charge of my wedding day hair, of which she currently had handfuls, but my makeup, too. I didn't want to walk down the aisle looking like a hairless blow-up doll. Once Val had finished applying her makeup, she disappeared and returned with her hands behind her back.
"I finished your bouquet last night," she said. "I also tied together some lavender bunches for Tiffany, me, and the other bridesmaids to carry."
I tried to look around her. "Let me see." She kept one hand behind her back as she passed me a blossoming bouquet of lilac, lavender, and greenery with cream and blush-colored roses. I inhaled the arrangement that complemented the plum color of their dresses.
"I love it."
"And I made this," she said, placing a simple crown with the same flowers on my head.
"Last night you said you needed something blue. I figured purple would work, but I added in some delphinium for good measure."
"Thank you," I said, hugging her.
Tiffany inspected the crown as well as the top of my head.
"Do you even have anything borrowed?" she asked.
"No," I said, frowning. Manning had handled most of the small details for today. I'd been more concerned with making our house guests comfortable and handling any last-minute arrangements.
"Your dress could be considered borrowed," Val suggested.
"True," Tiffany said.
"It looks like it's from the 70s. I don't know why you guys like that old stuff."
"And I don't know why you shop at Hollister when you're 35, Val shot back.
"Girls," Mom said, "try to remember it's Lake's Day."
"I'd rather look too young than too old," Tiffany muttered as she gave Val's bridesmaid dress a disdainful once-over, even though it was the same one Tiffany wore. She slow-blinked at Val's Birkenstocks.
"Are you a lesbian?"
"I don't identify with labels," Val said, "or give life to stereotypes, unlike some people."
"So that's a yes. Are you in love with my sister?"
Tiffany gasped.
"Or with me?"
Val rolled her eyes and turned away, muttering, "I'm changing into heels before the ceremony." No signature snippy comeback from Val.
"Look, for the sake of getting through today," I said, "let's all agree to keep you two apart as much as possible. Tiffany has a very contemporary sense of style, and Val isn't in love with me or anyone else."
Val jerked her head over her shoulder as if I'd surprised her, but her expression eased quickly.
"It's almost time," she said, packing up her makeup bag. "Where are your boots?"
"Shoebox in my closet."
"I'll get them ready," she said on her way out.
Tiffany whipped a mascara wand from its tube, like a sword from a sheath. She nodded at me.
"Look at the ceiling."
As Tiffany attacked my bare lashes and my mother fluffed my generally unfluffable dress hanging on the back of the bathroom door, I wondered what was going on with Val. She wasn't a lesbian, even if she sometimes pretended to be to mess with people, but she definitely had a secret. She'd planned my bachelorette party, a trip to Napa Valley with our friends from each coast, and she'd been available to help with anything wedding-related, but I'd noticed her withdrawing from me the past year. I thought maybe I'd been ignoring her too much for Manning, but when I'd asked to come spend a weekend at her house in Los Angeles recently, she'd made up some excuse about getting it fumigated. Val could charm and convince and deflect like a pro, but when it came to people she cared about, she was a shit liar. In the flurry of wedding activity, I hadn't had a chance to get to the bottom of her behavior, though.
"I'll make sure everyone's getting seated," Mom said, leaving me alone with Tiffany and her boobs.
They nearly spilled out of her strapless dress and into my lap as she put the final touches on my makeup. Most likely, she'd picked a size smaller than she needed.
"I think you hurt Val's feelings," I said.
"She doesn't have any," Tiffany replied. "Part your lips."
I slackened my jaw as she finished off my makeup with a pale pink gloss. She stepped aside to give me the mirror. For all her extravagance, she'd always been good at keeping my look natural. I angled my head, rounding my cheeks as they glowed and shimmered. Tiffany held out a hand mirror.
"For the back."
I stood and turned. Topped by Val's crown of flowers, my hair fell, nay, cascaded, in long, loose curls. You should have been a cosmetologist, Tiff.
I know.
She circled me as if I were a science project. I'm so glad you let your hair grow out a little. Anything above the shoulders doesn't suit you. She cocked her head. But I think you need more makeup for pictures.
Whenever I dressed up for a night out with Manning, he'd treat me like a princess. But once we got home and he unhooked my jewelry, slid off my heels, unzipped my dress, and unpinned my hair, I became a goddess under his worship. For him, less would always be more.
It's perfect, I said.
Fine, but come see me between the ceremony and pictures for a touch-up. And try not to cry.
I turned to my sister. She'd pulled her hair back into a chignon, and her icy blue eyes warmed against shimmery skin and long jet-black lashes. She looked different, from me and from herself. Today, of all days, there was a stillness in her I'd rarely seen. It made little sense, considering she'd have every reason to be upset, or to have blown off the wedding entirely. I grabbed her for a hug.
Thank you, I said.
It took her a moment, but she patted me on the back.
Okay, okay. I can't have my sister looking sloppy on her wedding day.
I meant thank you for being here, I said with a laugh as I pulled back to look her in the face.
Are you okay with all of this, or are you pretending?
She blinked at me.
You've seen me and Robbie together, right? He loves me so much that the little stuff doesn't matter anymore.
She rolled her eyes.
Not that your wedding is little. Jeez, sorry. Robbie says people are intimidated by me and I should be more careful with my words.
Oh, my sister. She hadn't changed, but she was trying. I supposed I had to give her some credit for that. At this point, aside from developing a little empathy, I wasn't sure I even wanted her to change that much. When she was no longer a threat to me, her behavior was kind of entertaining.
I'm not intimidated by you, I said. But I used to be.
Really?
I could see that, big sister and all.
She grinned. Anyway, I'm not sure I'd be here today if I hadn't met Robbie, but I did, so I'm glad I came.
I would have understood if you hadn't, but honestly, something huge would have been missing without you here.
Do you really feel that way? She asked.
The idea of Tiffany staying home and angry this weekend gave me no pleasure. I'd only ever wanted her to succeed by following her own path. I'd just wished that path had been heading in the opposite direction of Manning. I nodded, smiling.
Yes, I'm sorry for everything, but I hope we can both recognize it worked out for the best.
It did.
She wet the tip of her thumb and smeared away something on my cheek. Manning deserves to be happy, and I realize now that he never was. I talked to him for a while last night. He's a different man.
Tiffany knew Manning in ways I didn't. She'd been with him day in and day out when he'd suffered over me and struggled with his demons. I knew he was happy, but hearing Tiffany say it, my throat thickened. I could barely comprehend what love was at 16, and I know you didn't believe me back then, but I felt it for him.
Oh, geez, I told you not to cry.
Tiffany twisted around to swipe a tissue from the bathroom counter. As she did, I noticed her zipper stretching at the seams. She turned back with tears in her eyes, and that was the giveaway. Tiffany didn't waste good makeup on crying.
Tiff?
I asked. She dabbed at the corner of my eye.
What?
Could that stillness in her be a result of something greater than her love for Robbie?
Did you pick a date yet?
No. Her cheeks tinged the slightest shade of pink.
I know we told you guys fall, but fall is so predictable. We're going to wait until next year.
I see. Her chest rose and fell with each breath. Now that I'd noticed that her dress was tight, her breasts almost seemed to grow before my eyes.
Is there another reason you're waiting? I asked.
She balled up the tissue, shifting her eyes to meet mine.
What kind of reason?
Maybe that you don't want to order a dress in a bigger size? She narrowed her eyes, and for a second, I worried I'd gotten it wrong. Thinking she might be pregnant, I'd just implied my sister was gaining weight, which would be a surefire way to undo all the progress we'd made recently. But then she shrugged, Maybe. But today is your day, she said. It's your wedding. Don't worry about me.
Today was my day. Now I knew there was something fundamentally different about her. She was giving me the spotlight, possibly for the first time ever. Either she'd been abducted by aliens and they'd sent down a nicer version of her, or her hormones were going haywire and the pregnancy had softened her. I'd heard of that happening. Then again, I'd also heard of Roswell.
You are pregnant, I tried to contain my smile. Were you planning it?
I wasn't. Robbie probably poked holes in the condom. With no response to that, I laughed nervously.
Does Mom know?
No. I'm not even 7 weeks, and I'm not ready to say anything. She glanced over her shoulder. Considering what happened before, I'm scared to even let myself think it's true.
I nodded. I got anxious when my period was even a day late, so I understood. I promised myself this time, no matter what, I'd be there for Tiffany. There'd be no keeping my distance like before when she'd needed family by her side.
Between us, Manning and I have been trying.
I'm not surprised. She squeezed my arm. We can be pregnant together.
As soon as excitement buzzed through me, it fizzled. Manning and I had been off birth control long enough for me to understand I didn't have any say over the timing.
It's been a while, I said. I actually thought I might be waddling down the aisle.
How long? She asked.
Almost a year. But that's including the time it takes for birth control to wear off.
Oh. She nodded a little, blinking away.
That's not that long. And on the bright side, you're not waddling. That would be a terrible look on your wedding day.
I wasn't sure I agreed. I remembered how the thought of me as a pregnant bride had driven Manning wild.
You're probably right.
My mom returned and took my dress off the back of the door.
They're about ready for us.
I glanced at her in the mirror.
I need help getting into that.
Go to the bathroom first, Mom and Tiffany said at the same time.
I don't have to.
Make yourself, Tiffany said.
You can do it, Mom added.
Okay, I said, mostly out of a fear they wouldn't let me leave otherwise. When I'd finished, I found my mom, Tiffany, and Val in the bedroom, all holding open the gown.
I think it should go over her head, Val was saying.
After I just spent an hour on her hair and makeup? Tiffany asked.
She can step into it.
The top part is too tight, Val said. It won't fit over her hips. No offense, Lake. It's not you, it's the dress. I do this all the time on set.
Whatever, Tiffany said. If she gets foundation on it, that's on you.
Oddly, their bickering made me smile. It was normal, and normal was good today. I didn't want anything more than to walk down the aisle, marry my love, and eat and drink with friends and family. I slid off my robe and raised my arms as they worked on the sleeves and guided my head through the neckline. Once my mom had zipped me up and arranged the dress how she wanted, she guided me over to the floor-length mirror to help me into my shoes. I had picked up my off-the-shoulder, long-sleeved cream dress from a second-hand store in town. The lace bodice managed to hug my breast without cutting off my air, and the skirt fell in a loose column. It had been Tiffany's uncharacteristic suggestion to have fun with the shoes, so Val had helped me pick out chestnut brown leather booties to fit the outdoor setting of our ceremony and reception. I turned to the side, checking myself from all angles. The long lace sleeves bared only my shoulders. The toes of my booties stuck out from under the hem. I wasn't the most stylish, most glamorous, or the sexiest bride in the world, but I looked like myself, a woman about to walk down the aisle to the man she loved. Luckily, Manning made me feel sexy no matter what I wore. Still, I smiled to myself knowing I had some special wedding lingerie for him later. As I started to turn away from the mirror, my gaze snagged on my right hand. The deep purple color of the mood ring Manning had slid onto my finger in the boat was vibrant against the cream lace. It had turned that color the night I'd found my way back to Manning in Big Bear, after we'd eaten and argued and cried and made love, and I wasn't sure it had changed since. That purple was our shade of happiness, and the reason I'd chosen a plum color scheme for the wedding. Manning giving it to me on the lake the night before was no coincidence. I did have something borrowed after all. I considered it Madison's ring first, and a symbol of her presence. I flexed my hand against the dress one last time, then turned back to Mom, Tiffany, and Val. I'm ready. On a warm summer evening, I stood on my back porch overlooking friends and family as I prepared to marry my best friend. A violinist played over the murmurs of the crowd, the sun orange as it began to lower behind the mountains and trees. Manning and his friends had organized our backyard with wooden folding chairs divided by an aisle lined with lit lanterns. Of my five bridesmaids, one was from Pomona, and the other two had driven in from Los Angeles. The audience had seemingly arranged itself. Friends from New York took up one row, while other sections had been taken over by Californians, grad school classmates, or locals Manning and I had befriended. Tiffany blew Robbie a kiss from her bridesmaid post. Val's normally wry expression warmed and softened as she winked at someone in the second row. That someone had golden hair that was now down to his broad, suited surfer's shoulders. Corbin had narrowly missed my forcing him to be a bridesmaid. Opposite of my friends and sister stood Henry, Gary, and a few men in the construction business Manning had become close with since moving to Big Bear. The bridal party flanked a wedding arch I'd never seen. Crafted of the same honeywood in the house and adorned with cream gauze, ivy, pine cones, and white twinkle lights, I understood why I'd known nothing about it. It had to be a wedding gift to me from Manning. At the foot of one side of the arch, Blue wore a harness with a pouch for her role as ring-bearer. I looked everywhere but at Manning. Once I did, that would be it for me. I'd never been the same girl after Manning and I had met eyes on the street all those years ago, and I wouldn't be the same woman once I saw him waiting on his bride. With his thoughtfulness filling my heart, I descended to the porch to meet my dad at the base of the steps. He offered me his elbow.
You look like one of those princesses in the fairy tales you watched as a young girl.
I smiled. All Tiffany's doing.
I have no doubt.
We looped arms, and he guided me toward the aisle.
Are you nervous?
No, I answered, and finally met Manning's gaze. Undoubtedly, his eyes had been on me the whole time. Everything else fell away, my nose tingling. With a cream rose pinned to his suit lapel to match my bouquet, he adjusted the knot of his black tie and watched my every move with melted chocolate brown eyes. I wanted to smile at him, to thank him for the love and mastery it had surely taken to design the back lawn into a rustic paradise, from the arch to the twinkle lights strung in the trees, over chairs and hanging from the trellis, to the picnic tables he'd rented so we could host the reception here. I wanted to blow him a kiss, call for him, cry tears of joy. But I couldn't do any of that. Both Manning and I seemed frozen in the moment, just our hearts beating, sinking, as I was certain I actually felt his, and the tether between us pulling me closer and closer to him. If there were any other eyes on me besides Manning's as I walked down the aisle, I didn't notice. I heard only what I felt, pine needles crunching underfoot, the brush of my dad's suit against my dress, and the echo of my heartbeat in my ears. The setting sun cast a glow on Manning as we reached him. My dad turned to me.
Love you, Lake, he said.
And that was enough, but he added,
I'm proud of the woman you've become, even if I had little hand in it.
You were there with me every day, Dad, even if we were apart. The back of my throat burned as I held back tears. I hugged him. For better or worse. He chuckled, then let me go before nodding at Manning. I stepped up to the altar, pausing to run my fingertips over the smooth wood. Carved into the underside of the arch, where only Manning, the minister, and I could see, were tiny, almost invisible stars, and the initials L plus M in the center.
Charles helped, Manning said.
My dad smiled at me as he took his seat. I moved in front of Manning with tears in my eyes, but I could hardly look at him without losing it. I scratched Blue's head, then glanced at the ground in a vain attempt to compose myself, and noticed Manning's shoes. At my urging, he'd spent time and money getting a custom suit for today, but I'd forgotten to ask about his footwear. Through my teary vision, I inhaled a laugh at his Timberlands.
Friends and family,
the officiant began, pausing as Manning put a knuckle under my chin to lift my eyes to meet his. I swallowed thickly, but held his gaze and heard nothing else until it was my turn to repeat my vows, and then Manning his. I'd asked Manning once, months ago, if we should write our own vows, but he'd said no. He wanted to marry me in front of friends and family, but our most private and intimate feelings were just that, private and intimate. After so many years of not sharing with Manning how I felt, he was the only person I cared to tell anyway. We exchanged rings. Manning placed my palm in his and kissed the back of it before sliding on a simple gold band. I put a matching ring on his roughened hand. "By the power vested in me," the minister said, "I now pronounce you husband and wife, Manning." Manning's mouth slid into a sly smile. "Yes. You may now kiss your bride." Manning gathered me in his arms, but instead of kissing me, he shifted to whisper in my ear. "I love you, Lake Sutter. I don't know why you trusted me that first day or any day after it. You mesmerized me. There was, and still is, something in the way you are. Your blue eyes brought peace and light to my dark and noisy head." He drew back and took a moment to collect himself. "I think maybe you saved me, Bertie." With his last words, my tears finally slid free. I shook my head. "You saved yourself." "You did. More than once. If my life wasn't everything it is," he said, nodding over the crowd toward our house, "it would be nothing." I fisted his lapels to pull him closer, crying openly now. "Manning." "Yeah, Bertie." He picked me up by my waist so I could whisper in his ear. "I told you City Hall would have been fine, that the where and how and when didn't matter. But you saw right through me. Deep down, I still held on to the fear that we wouldn't make it here, that we wouldn't get this moment. So I pretended it wasn't important who witnessed it or how it was done. But it is, and you knew that. Maybe I saved your life, I don't know about that. But you love me with an intensity that can't be reckoned with. I fear for anyone who tries to get in our way. I'd say I want to spend forever with you. But forever isn't long enough."
"No, it isn't," he agreed.
"Now kiss me, Great Bear, and let's make this official."
Chapter 10.
2 hours into our marriage, I'd already lost my husband. Husband. My toes curled, and not just because I was failing to contain my happiness. The word husband actually did things to me, things that made me want to steal him away from the reception. That might have been possible anywhere else, but not in our home, where guests would easily miss us. My gut told me he'd snuck off on purpose, so I wasn't surprised to find him in the front yard with Henry and my dad. Each of them stood with loosened ties, a tumbler in one hand, and a cigar in the other.
"What did I tell you, Manning?"
Dad asked, winking at me as I picked up the skirt of my dress and descended the porch steps.
"Now that you're married, you won't get 10 minutes to yourself."
"That's so." Manning opened an arm to me, and I fit myself to his side.
"I don't think he minds,"
Henry said with a gentle smile. "I'm not here to force him back to the party," I promised, sliding one arm inside his suit jacket and around his waist. "I just missed him." Manning set his drink on the porch railing and balanced the cigar next to it. I lifted my face when he cupped my cheek for a kiss.
"I keep meaning to tell you how beautiful you look," he said.
"You told me," I said. "About 10 times so far. The last time was 30 minutes ago."
"Well, I've been meaning to say it for 30 minutes.
I could have basked in his adoration all night, and I planned to, but that would have to wait.
"I recognize that look,"
Dad said, sounding as if he might be approaching his drink limit.
"You two better be careful."
Manning pecked my forehead, then took his cigar from the railing.
"Why's that?"
I had a good buzz going from the champagne, so I picked up Manning's drink. "What is this?" I asked, sniffing it.
"Scotch," Manning answered as I took a sip. "It's strong."
Dad blew out a cloud of white smoke, then waved it away.
"Kaplan women get pregnant at the drop of a hat."
I spit out the scotch and coughed so hard that Manning took the drink away.
Easy, Dad said. That's $300 liquor, Lake.
Manning patted my back.
You all right?
He asked. Eyes watering, I nodded. Then I shook my head. No. Had my father really said that? My dad didn't bother with things that didn't interest him. If he took to meddling in my sex life the way he had my education, then I was definitely not all right.
I'll get you some water, Henry said, setting down his cigar to go in the house.
My burning throat kept me from thanking him and from stopping my dad from making his point, which he always did.
When your mother told me she wanted a kid, Dad said, I wasn't sure we were ready. Well, damn if we didn't conceive Tiffany the moment I agreed. Sure felt that way.
Dad, I protested, my voice creaking. Overshare.
It's basic biology, Lake. It was the same with you.
He turned to Manning.
I told Kathy we ought to give Tiffany a sibling, and 9 months later she had one.
I hid my face in Manning's jacket. Make it stop, Manning chuckled.
It's come up a few times, sir. That's what I was worried about, Dad said. Keep in mind that Lake has a lot ahead of her. Just because she's done with school doesn't mean the next part is easy.
Henry appeared next to me with a water.
Don't want grandkids?
He asked my dad. I took the bottle with a thank you and gulped water through my embarrassment.
I do, and Lord knows Kathy does, but there's a time for that, and it isn't when she owes tens of thousands in student loans. Student loans are an epidemic in this country,
Manning agreed. Since Manning was always reminding me when I stressed about money that my loans were the good kind of debt, I knew they didn't bother him. This was his way of changing the subject. Certainly my dad's words needled him the way they did me, but then their meaning started to settle in, and a far bigger, more disheartening realization eclipsed any of my irritation. Kaplan women were, actually, extremely fertile. In fact, Tiffany had ruined my first shot at a relationship with Manning years ago with her sudden pregnancy, and this time she hadn't even been trying with Robbie. Kaplan women get pregnant at the drop of a hat. Each month I got my period, Manning reassured me it was nothing to worry about. These things took time. They happened on their own schedule. Though pregnancy had definitely been on my mind, Manning's zen attitude, and the fact that we'd started a little earlier than we'd planned, hadn't given me a strong sense of urgency. But now, hours into our marriage, I worried about what lay ahead and behind us. Tonight, Manning had made me his wife. Beginning with our week in New York, we'd had plenty of conversations over the years about children. I wanted a family, but Manning needed one. A little girl to protect, to right the wrongs of his past and his father. Or a son to spend weekends with, fishing on the lake or building furniture in the workshed. I'd just stood in front of our friends and family and promised Manning a future, a family, a forever. Pressure built each month I got my period, and I definitely considered that there might be an issue. But for the first time I wondered, was there a chance I physically couldn't get pregnant? Ever?
Feel better?
Henry asked. I blinked out of my daze. Sorry?
The coughing. Went down the wrong tube, eh?
Yes, thank you for the water. I cleared my throat. I haven't had a chance to meet your granddaughter yet. She's barely made a peep all night.
Kara was so worried the baby would ruin the ceremony. She stood in the back with her the whole time in case they needed to make a break for it. How old?
Dad asked. Henry smiled through a puff of his cigar.
5 months. My first grandkid.
Manning shook his head, lifting his glass.
She's beautiful. I feel like an uncle. You are, kid. We're lucky that Kara and her husband moved down the street. I see Abby almost every day. You might not feel so lucky when they're calling you to babysit every weekend,
Dad said.
I don't mind.
Henry swirled his drink.
I'm retired. I could use the money.
My dad looked disgusted.
They pay you?
Henry laughed, and it was such a rare, joyous sound that I joined in.
I'm kidding, he said. I got the time, and the baby grows on you. Grows on you? You're crazy for her.
Manning got an ashtray from the deck and put out his cigar.
You're like a new man, Henry. Baby will do that to you. I look forward to it.
Manning set down his drink and my empty water bottle before taking my hand.
Come on and I'll introduce you.
I flashed a wave at my dad and Henry as Manning led me around the side of the house. So I'd stolen him away after all, which reminded me why I'd gone looking for him in the first place. I stopped walking when we were halfway around the house and pulled Manning back by his hand.
What is it?
He asked, turning to me. There's something about the word husband, isn't there? I asked. Try it. He stepped into me, lowering his voice as he emphasized,
husband.
I laughed. I mean, try it the other way. Call me your wife.
My wife.
With his next step, we retreated until my back was up against the side of the house and we were hidden from the partygoers.
I really fucking like it. Wife.
From the backyard, I recognized the thumping bass of an Usher song on the sound system we'd rented. Perfect baby-making music. I slid my hands up Manning's suit and around his neck. Me too. He took my face in his hands and, for the first time as my husband, kissed me for real, without eyes on us and less politely than he had in front of others.
We can't do this now, he said. I mean, I can do this now.
He moved his pelvis against my stomach, pinning me to the wall with his growing hard on.
But I love your dress too much to risk ruining it.
That's your concern? My dress? I breathed. Not the guests a few feet away? He half-smiled.
Them too. I want to preserve this dress, but once it comes off...
I bit my bottom lip. What happens then?
I'm taking full advantage of our first night as a married couple. No distractions.
Not that Manning was ever really distracted when it came to sex, but tonight, the determination in his expression made me wriggle between his body and the wall. I can't wait.
Stop drinking, he said. I've only had two tonight. I recommend you get a coffee and take it easy. Conserve your energy.
I frowned. How come?
We're going to be at it all night.
Manning? I blushed at his unapologetic bluntness. We have people staying at the house until tomorrow.
Not anymore. I booked them all at a hotel in town.
I put my hands on his chest, trying to read him in the dark. No, you didn't.
I did. I'm sorry, Lake.
He shrugged.
I tried to tell you I wouldn't have people in my home on my wedding night.
And I told you I'd be quiet. He snorted.
Impossible. Not in our bed. Not the first night you're my wife. I would have had to take you out to the stable.
I scoffed, laughed, shoving him away. I'm not a wild animal, I said, walking off. He grabbed my hand and fell in step beside me.
But I am, and you're in heat, so you better gird your loins.
Gird my loins? I asked. I'm in heat?
Maybe. You're about halfway between periods, right?
I stopped and turned to him, taking my hand back. Wait, what? I asked. You're serious?
I don't know for sure, he said. But this is around the time you'd be ovulating.
You think about that? I asked.
Not a lot, he said, laughing. But sometimes. I was paging through some of your textbooks a while back and got curious about the process.
I put my hands on my hips. But is that something you plan sex around?
No, not that I'd need to.
He closed the distance between us, tucking my hair behind my ear.
You initiate more around this time each month. You never noticed?
No, I said. I mean, of course I understand how it works given what I do, but I wasn't keeping track or anything.
It's not a big deal, he said. You know I'm ready to go any time, any day, ovulating or not. But sometimes I wonder, and I can tell you I'll be wondering tonight if...
If what?
If we're conceiving.
That's what you're thinking about during sex? He lowered his head and his voice.
Whether I'm putting a baby in you. Yeah, sometimes. And it gets me so fucking hot, Lake.
Okay, okay, I said, my face warming as I put my hands on his chest to hold him off.
The hunger developing in his eyes told me we were a few moments away from me having to walk into the party ahead of him to shield his crotch. Let's pick this up later when we can do something about it.
Sooner the better,
he growled in my ear, as if it were some kind of threat. I shivered, and he slid an arm around my shoulders on our way back to the reception.